Okay. I don't know if this will come in, but here...
How do I clack it?
No, shh, 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 shh.
Don't talk over the clack.
There it was.
It did not come through at all. It's the least satisfying payoff it could have given us.
This is going to
just
be great
like the
because,
Switch 2 in general.
Because it might actually come up in the recording.
Well, put your toy away. We gotta get down to business at some point.
Put away your $600 plaque.
Please, it was only $400.
Yes, thanks to gift cards.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Even still. Those gift cards could
have
fought.
I have an important thing. I was telling Evie, it's downloading right now, straight from Nintendo HQ, an unlisted game that you can no longer buy.
Can you guess which one it is?
Is it the one that you mentioned the other day?
Which was?
I don't remember these things.
Is it Umamusume Horsey Run?
It's not.
Is it like...
The Umamusume Party Game?
Yeah.
No. Evie was telling me they did announce Lego Party.
Yeah, okay.
I always vote Lego Party.
What are the politics of Lego Party?
Rebuilding this country brick by brick.
Any other policies you want to note from the Lego Party?
No.
Big oil extraction, weirdly enough.
Yeah, that's really the thing.
Fracking.
Like, no party is perfect, right?
Well, remember, you can always tell the state of U.S. politics by the militarization of the Lego cop.
No.
National Guard.
No, here's the other thing. Here's the other part of our politics. Don't tread on me. It'll hurt real bad.
Plus two. That's pretty good.
But anyway... That's the Lego Party.
The Lego Libertarian Party.
Legotarians, yeah.
Here. We can look live on if
Oh my fucking god. No, Bridget.
Hey, do you think this runs better on the Switch 2?
I don't think it runs well on anything.
For the people who can't see, who's everyone except us, she's booted up the terrible Nintendo Switch Popeye game. Again, you're doing visual auditory gags that do not translate to a podcast recording.
This is worth $800, clearly.
The thing that sucks so much is just how clean it looks.
Yeah.
Like.
Also, I need you to do one thing for me, Bridget. I need you to capture on mic from your device the sound of you getting punched by Bluto. There we go. Thank you.
It didn't come through over Discord,
I'm
but
sure
I'm looking
it'll be
forward
in the
to the audio.
Yeah.
I like how every time we joke about the Switch 2 price, it just gets more expensive. Just like it was $1,000.
What's an $800 piece of garbage?
That fucking $10,000 piece of shit.
If I had $1,000,000, I'd buy a house. I mean, like, what do you...
But
okay,
that money
put your toy away. Put your fucking toy away,
hey,
Bridget.
I've added cost to this Switch 2 by having an exclusive game that you can't buy anymore. My audio is going to be so fucked up in the beginning because it's gonna.
Can you not stop playing the Popeye game? Make like everyone else in the world and stop playing that. Don't play that game.
Put the fucking Popeye game.
Popeye down.
If I were next to you, I would snatch the Switch 2 from your hands and go lock it in a drawer right now.
Like, I feel like I have to be the mother and be like, put that away. We have company.
It's fun to imagine like the virtual game card for Popeye.
Yeah.
Oh my
extensive
God.
Nintendo DRM to make sure that no one can play Popeye without being allowed to.
Also, I feel like the fact of the matter is by having downloaded that Popeye game onto your Switch, you have actually decreased the value of it. You now officially have this, the cheapest Switch 2 on the market.
Yeah.
Dear God. Okay, well, let's go ahead and clap.
Judging from the audio spikes, maybe the thwack was at least captured on my side. So you...
I'm have happy fun I listening out for that treated. One, Jay.
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film, that's the gist. Put it on the list.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will come through just clear, just like my audio is now that I'm recording on the correct microphone. I cannot tell you how torturous it was editing the last episode and just having the constant reminder that I was using the wrong fucking microphone in audition.
Just days like, working through your mistake, hitting you right in the face. Just, and like, yeah.
It's like trying to go to bed, trying to sleep on a bed of needles. Like it just... It's just
I can hear
sucks.
The voices. They suck.
Oh, dear fucking wow. God. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Put It On The List. This is Introduce Yourself, First Person in the Rotation.
Bridget.
And
I'm Evie.
And
I'm Brianna, the lovable scamp.
And I'm Jay, and this is the movie discussion podcast where every episode one of us picks a film and the next person in the rotation has to connect their movie choice by either cast or crew. Last time on Put It On The List, we discussed the, let's call it, underwhelming Chronicles of Riddick. And Bree, you decided to take us even further back in time to a timestamp in history with Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Indeed I did.
Like,
I cannot wait to crack into this gem.
One of the most quintessentially 90s things that you could watch.
It was definitely a part of my upbringing. It was a big cultural thing.
However, before we get all into all that, I feel like this catching up segment is going to be like dominated by me, Bridget, and Evie talking about Elden Ring Night Rain. So, sure. Hey, Bree, what have you been up to before we hop into all that?
You know, just art commissions up the wazoo, having a great time with that. That's about it. Just kind of focusing on creative endeavors, drawing things. Someone vouched for me on Newgrounds Art Portal as being a viable and good artist, so I'm now on their, you know, main searchable front page stuff. So yeah, no, I'm moving up in the world. We're doing good.
Congrats.
Come full circle from watching dumb little animations on Newgrounds to being a featured artist on it. So look at me go.
If only they could see me now.
If only they could see me now, drawing my OC competently with fancy hair texture and large Tech Guns. Nines in her hands. I love her. I love Breezy. Anyway.
Okay, but that's all, really.
That's it, really.
For sure.
Still waiting for VGen to hit my verification. I qualify, it just takes some time. But that's about it.
Evie, what have you been up to aside from Night Rain?
Still been trying to get a job. That seems like it's going well. Maybe by the next recording, I'll have conclusively good news about it.
Here's hoping.
For all we know, in October, we could all be recording in the same space.
That'd be awesome. All fighting for the mic.
Insane. Otherwise, I've been devouring Blueprints. That game's good.
How is Blueprints?
It's cool. I was skeptical about it kind of going in, but it's fully won me over in terms of being like a puzzle game that has this like roguelike kind of DNA inside of it.
Because, that's the weird thing with the mechanic of it is like you're trying to like traverse this house and solve puzzles around it, but you're like limited by the number of steps you can take. Is that it?
Yeah, and also the house is like randomly drafted by you every day. So every time you open a door into a new room in the house, you have to pick what the next room is going to be. And so you're trying to make sure that like you don't accidentally like close yourself off by like, you know, drafting a door into a wall or something like that. But you're also solve puzzles within the rooms and like there are particular rooms that you need to have in particular places to solve like larger puzzles within like the mystery of the game. Like it's very cool.
Something that I've been wanting, because I've basically been trying to like look at that game as little as possible. How House of Leaves coded is that game?
Pretty House of Leaves coded, because like it is just like every time you go into this fucking house, like you don't know how big it's going to be. Like you don't know if it's like going to be like all 45, like because like the house is always arranged. It's constricted to the, like this 9x5 grid. So like there's 45 rooms that you're moving into. But like, depending on how the drafting works out, it could be like, I don't know, there could be like 20 rooms and the rest of the house is just empty. And eventually, like you start getting in, like you start having to contend with other parts of like the estate grounds that you're on. It doesn't have like the abject like horror element of House of Leaves, but like you are definitely in a space that is weird.
It's got the non-liminal, or the liminal,
non-Euclidean,
the liminal space,
yeah,
non-Euclidean element to it. Okay, neat. I can't wait to eventually play that game once I'm done playing Hundredth Line, because I'm still playing Hundredth Line. I've at least since the last time we recorded hit the point where that game, like, it's crazy that Hundredth Line basically has a 40 hour long tutorial for it. And also the fact of the matter is that, like, once you beat that tutorial, you gain the ability to skip battles that are more or less the same as like ones you've done before. So it turns from like a tactics tower defense game to basically it just becomes a visual novel, more or less. Like it Great. Weirdly scales down from where it starts, despite it mostly starting with the tutorial. It's very fucked up in its structure that way.
a real Final Fantasy 13.
Sure, I'll take your word on that.
Final Fantasy 13 famously has an extraordinarily long tutorial to get the combat system up.
I see. Gotcha. Really, the only thing I have to report on with that game is I feel like it's probably I can't speak to it probably as well as Bree could, since you have now officially played more Uchikoshi games than I have, but I feel like it's probably the most well-realized version of what that guy is always trying to do with stories, the way that he plays with, like, multiple timelines and, like, branching points and stuff like that, where, like, oftentimes in those games, like, it's a mystery, so, you know, each timeline that you go down is supposed to be revealing more and more of the game that you are playing through, like, peeling back layers until you finally get to the core and you get a full picture of everything. However, at the very least, when I played VLR, Virtue's Last Reward is the only one of his games that I've personally played. The issue that I ran into is character consistency, because that's the biggest challenge of like branching timelines, is you need to have different things happen. However, like, to make it interesting, you usually have to like fuck with the characters so much that they essentially become like different characters from where they originally start out. And that was what I butted my head against a lot in Virtue's Last Reward. At the very least, each separate timeline that I have been going down in Hundredth Line, the characters all feel consistent enough, and each story that you are going down in that game is different enough that anytime you're starting to get like bored with one flavor of game, you could be like, I need to get out of this path and do something else.
And I will say, getting to watch you, like, as I love the iSomnium Files games, and getting to watch you having played through all of the Danganronpa games, it is interesting. I can see how both of their influences on games are, like, making this perfect chaos child here. Like, it's...
Yeah.
They had something magical here, and it is a really fascinating game, even just on that merit of seeing the way that they're both contributing to this. It's also kind of neat to see those designs, those character designs, in the kind of three-dimensional, like, you know, rendered moving around bits that you would see in, like, the Somnium Files games with, like, those characters. Like, getting to see them in motion in 3D, kind of cool. Kind of
like
that.
You get a little bit of that with, whatchamacallit, the Master Detective Raincode game. I that was like the Kodaka game that he did a couple of years ago that basically like just fell off the map that no one besides like me played.
I will say I forgot completely about it until you brought it up. So
yeah. You forgot about Ultra Despair Girls. It had those designs in 3D a long time ago.
The black sheep of the Danganronpa family,
the scene
truly.
Where the one character is pelted by pie, so it looks like he's being came all over.
Bukakied. Bukakied. Ah.
But yeah, 100 line. The fact that I have been playing it for. I've been playing it for 80 hours. I'm still in on it, and I more or less still don't feel like I'm close to the ending of that game, but I'm still engaged. I think speaks to the quality of that game.
A little bit more to go, Jay, and you will beat the time it took me to get through that FF7 sequel.
Oh, right. I forgot. You played that game for like 100 hours.
Yeah.
Aside from Night Rain, Bridget, have you been up to anything lately?
I mean, it's mainly been Night Rain on and off.
What a weird fucking video game Elden Ring Night Rain is. It's kind of amazing, except for the parts where it fucking sucks. And those parts really just kind of sour the pot at times.
Well, that's the problem. You need to get... there are different pots in the game, and so one's like a lightning pot, and the other's a meat pot.
Boo. Boo. I was telling Bridget about it, but I feel like the biggest thing that I'm butting my head against is I feel like the roguelike elements of this game are at odds with the Fortnite elements of this game, and it just really kind of... And then those are also at odds with the, like, Souls part of this game in such a weird way that, like, when it clicks, it's fucking great, but like the times outside of that you're just like I kind of hate this. Or at the very least I don't hate it, but I get deeply frustrated with it in a different way than like every other Souls game I've ever played.
It's weird because it feels like an Elden Ring version of Risk of Rain 2, a game that I've been playing a whole lot of over the past year, and that it is just like, it feels very similar in like the sense of everyone's like trying to like run around and like build themselves up and get power. It kind of feels a little bit more like that than like even like a Fortnite does. It feels like a Fortnite, even though it does have like that battle royale stuff in it. But like the way it is, like it is just fully like PvE, and the way that stuff like scales against you as like the days go on, like it just reminds me a whole lot of that game.
Yeah, like the Fortnite aspect is really just the ring more than anything.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely true. I mean, I think also like the way that like the items that you get, like that's also very Fortnite-y, I would say.
Yeah, but like I think the way that the other thing that makes it feel like Risk of Rain is like the way that you feel like you are playing like particular characters that like you are heavily incentivized to build them in a certain way, or like you're like, When you play as the Executor, you are looking for katanas, like, and like, you know, Iron Eyes looking for bows, and like, you know, every character has like their own like weapon that they really want.
Except the game barely has any fucking katanas.
And that's the thing that's weird about it. It's just like,
Well, it's one of those things where a lot of the characters, if you look at their stats, they're a lot more flexible than just their base weapons. Like I play the Duchess a lot of the time, and you can get buffs for daggers. However, Jay, if I found a katana, I would want that katana because katanas work super well with her, even though that's not her like preferred weapon.
But the thing that's the katana is like the thing.
Well,
for
yeah,
the executioner.
That's
like
Elden Ring.
The katana is all he gets. That's all the executioner gets, and that's the thing that sucks. Is like the game.
He has to have dexterity stats for that, right?
Yeah, but like the thing is his whole build is centered around the katana because he's the fucking Sekiro character. Like he is built on those like deflect things. So like ideally you're looking for katanas.
Well, yeah.
To work with, but the game barely hands out katanas. Like
So what you're saying is you wish the game would like more favor the character's weapons when you're selecting them in the roles?
Yeah, that's like part of the thing that I feel like is at odds with like the really cool elements that this game, that the game plays with. Like Evie was saying, like each class feels like really fucking distinct and like you can really dig your teeth into them. However, like it does not feel like the part where you're out in the world is really like crafted to playing off of that super well, except for certain classes. Like I feel like it definitely can do that for like the Raider. There's like a lot of, you find a lot of great weapons out in the world. It's good for Wilder. You find a lot of like great swords and stuff like that. There's a puppy.
She's adorable.
Aww.
Hi, puppy.
Yes, she is. But
a big yawn.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get to hear that puppy yawn on.
Oh yeah.
On during the edit. But yeah, like it feels like the game like actively caters to like specific classes super well, but then like there's other classes that's just like good fucking luck.
Wow. Yeah.
It's mainly the executioner. Like it's partially my fault. Maybe I should branch out and play some other characters. Maybe that would serve me well.
They'll balance them out in time. They're patching it still, yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing. Like a lot of this stuff could possibly even be outdated by the
next time we talk about it.
But like there's another thing I like is like the way that it encourages character building through like even if like you have a weapon that you're happy with and you don't want to pick up anything else, like you're still looking for like passive buffs and stuff. I think that's really cool. Yeah. And I think generally speaking, the way that that game does character building is fun.
Yeah, I've said this before, but generally there's only one character I think that like absolutely needs some sort of improvement, which is the Revenant who is basically will die if she is hit, and
glass cannon of a character
has arcane specification.
She's got faith scaling.
Faith and like she has like an S in arcane. She relies on AI partners, but the problem is those AI partners need to either be more smart or like be buffed, because if she runs out of magic, she's effectively useless in a fight. Which is why some people have like crazy builds with her where it's like, okay, you can regain FP with a certain talisman that gives you madness. And when your madness fills up, that builds up the magic points. So the way some people use her is to make her just constantly filled with madness to regain.
I like her unique weapon. I think that's cool, but yeah. I don't know how useful it is.
Yeah, that's actually a unique weapon for this game, too. That's not in base Elden Ring.
I was kind of, like, thinking about it, Evie, when you said that you were, like, finding, like, the character building really fun. I was trying to, like, reflect on it, just, like, do I think it's fun? And it's, like, I don't know if it's fun for me so much as it is very interesting. Like, the way that they have those, like, what are the like trinkets that you get again? I forget.
Oh, the little relics.
Yeah, the relic system is interesting, but like the way that game like ekes those out to you is like so many of them are like kind of like worthless that like it runs into like that's the part that feels like it's at odds with like the normal Souls game, in that like usually at the very least with like most Souls games, there is like just solid progress that you tend to make like through that game. Even when you're eating shit against bosses and stuff like that, you can find smaller enemies and level up. You can level up your weapons and stuff like that. Like, and then there is also the just getting better at fighting the bosses, but like the progression feels so small and incremental that like that part is really like rubbing against me the wrong way personally.
Well, it's a different setup because in this game now, progress is if you beat the final boss instead of the other thing, because so you basically every run roll for a relic or whatever. However, there are set given relics. It beat a boss, one of the major bosses, you get their talisman, and then each character has like two or three talisman they're just given through their own quest lines.
Sure, but more what I'm trying to get across, like I understand that that's the thing that's doing it, but I feel like with at least other roguelikes, like they're most other roguelikes, I feel like, still have, like, a solid, like, pretty good, like, progression to them, even if you don't, like, beat a run, necessarily. And, like, with the difficulty of Souls games, like, beating a run is not as easy as beating a run in a roguelike or something like that, and that's what I'm rubbing against.
You know what they say, rubbing is racing.
I do think that like where Fortnite finally comes back into the conversation is just like even if I don't win, like I feel like I have a good time like every run. Just like the way that this game feels like Elden Ring with like the pedal all the way to the floor is very fun.
We have to talk about Yoda and like just curb like just every time we see Yoda now, we're just excited to beat that little green bastard.
The shit out of that little fucker.
Like that's the thing. I'm probably like the most down on this game amongst the three of us, but like I do still have fun with it every time we play it.
The other thing we should note is we kind of have just been on the first level for the
most
part.
We tried to branch out to the second level and the fucking like volcano is a nightmare, and also like one of the bosses is arguably probably one of the worst design decisions I think I've personally seen in a Souls game for a boss fight.
I mean, I figured like, out how to conquer him now, but I didn't realize.
Yeah,
the
thing about
the
Death Blight. Yeah, we didn't know at the time that, like...
like, enemies drop things for you to just eat and negate it.
It's constant adds. Like, constant respawning adds are just a bad idea. Like, that's not good.
Now, is he a fun boss? No.
That's the thing, is it's a very unfun boss.
To be fair, I never liked fighting worms. The worm people.
I mean... That's the other thing, is, like, they took one of my least favorite bosses or like, major enemies from Elden Ring and added constantly respawning adds to it, and it's, like, great. Awesome. This fucking sucks.
A mandate from Miyazaki. Okay, to note, people hate two things, the tree worms and these worms. Make sure they're in the cave, goddammit, and upgrade them.
Yes, Evie, you look like you had a thing.
I was about to say, like, Miyazaki was like, if we can't have a swamp in this game, we're going to put this thing in instead, but there is a swamp in this game.
So, yeah. I was just about to chime in and say, don't worry, we just haven't gotten to it yet.
So I don't know what the others are, but so far I have seen the volcano. There's an ice mountain that spawned one time. And that seemed a lot more traversable than
I think there's like a rot forest in that you can run into also. But yeah, fun, pretty fun game, except for the times where it sucks.
Yeah. It's fun when you're winning, it sucks when you're losing. Yeah.
The other thing is like on other maps, you can be visited by various other bosses who just either show up.
That was so funny the first time that you were suddenly getting like just jumped by Margit. You're like, wait, no, why? And it was specifically after you had like gone off and done the thing you normally do, where you just randomly run off in a direction away from us. And we're like, there's nothing we can do to help you. God be with you. I'm sorry.
God be with you. I am being stopped by
the fell omen.
The fell omen. Oh, man. There's also...
He's crouching up.
He's using his haste room.
Anyway, we should move on.
Yeah, let's go on to some.
That's Breeze. That's Breeze.
We're a movie podcast. Yeah,
Breeze. Interjection. Breeze, like, I would like to done be part listening of the discussion to too.
Listen, Bree, I don't know how much we're gonna get out of talking.
I
about
have
Beavis.
Plenty to talk about.
Okay. But before we get important. To that, we do.
Oh, it's... Listeners, it is a dog sitting in a big leather chair, leaning over the edge of
with
one
her,
of
like,
the arms. Yeah,
peering just, outside.
Yeah, demure. Peering outside. Neighborhood watch, and now she's like ended her watch and is just like curled
lying
up
down
on.
Sideways in a way that looks
yeah.
Painful
lying
to the
it
back.
Does not look comfortable, but yeah. Dogs are weird like that.
Yeah, they dogs sure have are. Weird skeleton.
Okay. Icebreaker questions.
Yes.
You can send us icebreaker questions at putonthelist.neocities.org. You can send us emails at wifecitygaming@gmail.com.
Hell yeah.
You can follow us anywhere major podcasts are sold. Wife City Productions on youtube.com. putonthelist.bsky.social.
That's the
is the place where you can send us icebreaker questions. Owen sent us an icebreaker question asking, yeah. Are you recording on the correct microphone?
We made sure of it.
Yes, I am. Evie, are you recording on the correct microphone?
I am.
Bridget, are you recording on the correct microphone?
Yeah, it's not connected to my Switch 2.
Fantastic.
Or
glad
my
to
PS5
hear.
Controller.
I see.
Thank you for the reminder, Owen.
Owen also asks, what's your favorite Pokemon?
Oh, that's easy. Togepi. It's been
really?
It's been it since the start of Togepi's inception.
That's genuinely your answer is Togepi?
Yes.
What about Togepi strikes you?
It's a cute egg.
All right.
Did you know Togepi is known as the egg Pokemon?
Yes, I did. I was.
What about that. Exeggutor? That's one. Yeah.
Yeah. Or I can't remember
the other ones, you know, the notable ones. For me, I think it's probably either Mew or Bulbasaur.
Bulbasaur?
I like plants.
Okay.
And he's a cute little guy.
Okay, for sure.
Yeah.
Evie? Remember when Mew was on Barnes & Noble's Twitter account saying of
no.
Pokemon
no.
and men and showed a picture of Mew voring somebody?
No, but I did have a Mew plushie with moving eyes that like made noises because I was a very trans child.
For sure.
It was cute.
Evie, how about you?
I like the Abra evolutionary line. I think Abra's cute. And Kadabra and Alakazam are cool. Haunter is my number one favorite Pokemon ever. I love that guy.
Nice.
He's hilarious. And I don't know. I like a lot of Pokemon. I think
he's good at licking.
They make cute ones.
He sure is good at licking.
Oh yeah.
My number one with the bullet is Umbreon. Like, it's a very simple design, but like I've always just dug the sleek look. Of that one for
fair.
Me. Arcanine.
Big fluffy.
Yeah, big fluffy dog. Yeah. Like, what's not to love about a big fluffy dog?
Jay, wait. I think I've told you this before, but is that why you're into me?
Because you're a big fluffy dog?
No. I've cosplayed Umbreon at MegaCon at least once
or
twice.
And we don't have pictures of
this? No, I think she sent me photos of that. That's not the reason why. There are actual reasons besides the fact that you've cosplayed Umbreon.
I can't figure out what
she
likes
me either. Also, I don't want to date Umbreon. I think it's a cute Pokemon.
Umbreon would be cool to get a beer with, but I don't want a long-standing relationship.
That's what I'm saying. You're cute in a different way. You're cute in a my girlfriend way versus cute in a, like, that's a cool pet that I would like to own.
You gotta remember, I'm the porn artist slash monster fucker here. So, like, I'm the one who, you know.
Well noted that you've done a Pokemon Smasher Pass.
Hell yeah, I'm gonna do another one. I got up for it.
Now, moving on to questions more, like, related or tangentially related to our topic today. Owen also asks, are you interested in that upcoming King of the Hill reboot? I'm mildly curious, but mostly because from the promo video, I think Bill died of COVID and I need to be sure.
So I'm going to say no. I am someone who's been staunchly against reboots because it's one of those things where it's like for diminishing returns, you wring something out that's already ended. Like, especially when it's a property that's already ended, let it end. Things need to end. Sure. And I think that continuously going for it, like as someone who is very kind of 90s pilled and kind of like I've got that in the early 2000s, I drag nostalgia with me super hard, but I don't want to watch it get wrung out and die. I don't want to watch the cow get so milked that it turns into jerky. I just, you know, let that thing exist when it was and how it was. And that's kind of my view on it. I just kind of don't care.
I generally agree with everything you said there. Mm-hmm. I would say amongst anything that has ended and, like, been purported as getting a reboot, King of the Hill is maybe one of the few, like, ones that I would say, like, I guess I'm mildly curious in it also, just because that's a series that at least, like, there's, like, actual, like, character development that happens over the course of King of the Hill.
I loved it for
as
that.
As a animated sitcom.
Yeah.
So, like, to see them build upon that is at least an interesting possibility.
What do you
so.
Think they're going to talk about in the modern problems of the world? Hey, Dad, I did 23andMe. Turns out I'm 180th African-American. I'm
this
gonna
is
say
the third it. Time Whoa. I've heard you do this bit.
Why is it... I wanted to say it on recording. Not that word, but that joke.
Yeah. Anything else you want to incriminate yourself with?
Dad, I'm a Twitch streamer. Oh my god, that's a radical right-wing leaning VTuber group you're joining, Bobby.
Oh my god.
It's anyway, okay, Dan, I'm anime. I can't be held responsible for what I say. That internet ain't right, I'll tell you what.
How about you two? Are either of you interested at all in that King of the Hill reboot?
I mean, I probably won't watch it, but I'm sure people will link to anything that's actually funny in it. So... Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the sad thing, is anything you don't want to engage with will be forcibly in its best moments put upon us in clips. You know, so that...
Well, you don't have to
that's
watch
a society
that.
Thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's not forcible if you don't engage with it.
I can block the hashtags and stand by my...
There you go. That's
my own
the,
stupid little...
That's
you know.
How you deal with social media, is you block the things that you don't want to
It's never
deal
too
with.
Early to think
and
about
that. And totally
that.
Gets rid of them.
How about you, Evie?
I'm willing to check it out. Kelly Turnbull, who is a comic artist and animator, was out there saying that they directed the first episode and they directed the, or they storyboarded the title sequence.
That is fascinating.
Especially oh, sorry, you're probably going to say it. Go
yeah,
ahead.
And apparently the work that when they were looking out for that position, the work that the interviewers pointed to as they were being particularly impressed by was a thinly veiled The Bouncer fanfic yaoi comic, which is just like, all right, okay.
Yeah,
yeah, that's cool.
That points to there being a good team behind that they can recognize that kind of stuff.
I think the thing that's interesting, or like the thing about it that, like, I'm interested to see more from it, because like it does feel like they have something to say with it, like it seems like something that they could easily like find things to talk about. And there's a lot of material there.
Dale as a character is like such a rich, there's such a rich text to pull from with Dale as a character in the modern age that we live in, where like
apparently he actually went into politics, depending on according to the intro sequence. So it's like, fuck.
As I was saying, a rich character to explore in this day and age.
And especially since like you look at the recent Beavis and Butthead stuff, where, you know, it does more, you know, Beavis and Butthead as you would expect, but also it's just like the older versions of those guys, where like Beavis is like acting as a caretaker for Butthead and all this kind of weird shit, where it's like, okay, like it seems like they're not just doing more of the same stuff, they're actually like playing with it. And I think there's potential there. I'm willing to hear it out.
And then lastly,
also one last thing, just something that lightly sold me on it is like the way that Peggy's character design differs from how she was in the previous series looks just like many Southern women that I know. So it's just like, oh yeah, yeah, that's I have three aunts that look like that.
Wow. For sure. And lastly, from James, aka Battlehawk on Blue Sky, they comment saying, "Bits that live rent-free in your head. Mine is Butthead looks at a hot dog cooker in the convenience store and he's like, wieners. Reused animation from the first time he looked at it. They're still there." Does anyone have any particular Beavis and Butthead bits that live rent free in their head?
The probably the bleeding one, where he gets it's where Beavis gets a nosebleed, and then like at one point the way that he tries to remedy this is like by having him go through the like things for hiccups, like having him be upside down pouring water on him. But the bit from that kills me is, with no explanation, you see him with the door and a string tied to it slamming it, and you hear Beavis screaming and the wall is splattered with blood completely. And that's the one that just sits right with me.
Hmm. How about anyone else? Does anyone else have a Beavis and Butthead thing they wanna?
I didn't watch original Beavis and Butthead.
Really?
Yeah, it's lost on me for the most part.
I watched some of the first reboot, which is not the current reboot, but the they did in like the...
in like 2009 or whatever.
Yeah.
Jersey Shore relevancy. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was an episode where they were pouring oil on a duck so they could get a date with some lady in like Greenpeace.
That's pretty good.
And I also remember that there was an episode where, you know, Twilight was a big thing, so they asked a homeless person to bite them to turn into a werewolf. Instead, he just has a major infection and dies, basically.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Well, I guess from there, we can kind of seamlessly transition into discussing our main point of discussion on the podcast
Beavis
today.
And Butthead do America.
But here's the thing. I feel like before you do a general rundown of like the movie, we kind of have to talk about Beavis and Butthead as just a thing.
I came prepared.
I was hoping you would. Okay, so what the fuck is Beavis and Butthead?
So for those who are, you know, maybe a little newer to the world or just didn't get involved with it, I'll say, I don't know if it was the same for you girls, but growing up in the place I did anyway, Beavis and Butthead was as prevalent as the Macarena. Inescapable thing. They permeated culture as a satire on stupid teenagers, ironically breeding an entire generation of stupid teenagers who imitated them, thinking they were cool. I definitely went to school with a handful of people from elementary and middle school who stretched out their t-shirts pretending to be Cornholio. In Newsweek of 1993, John Leyland wrote about the show, saying that it was the downward spiral of the living white male. Surely it ends here. People most notably referred to incident, as it were, that created a horrific controversy around this show was how the show was blamed for the death of 2-year-old Jessica Matthews in Moraine, Ohio in October 1993. The girl's 5-year-old brother, Austin Messner, set fire to his mother's mobile home with a cigarette lighter, killing the 2-year-old. The mother later claimed that her son watched an episode which said that fire is fun. And so this created this this became like the Mortal Kombat level, like, this is the thing that will destroy society. And then you look back at it and you're like, this is just 2 idiots. What do you mean? You know, so despite the many questions like, why was your 5-year-old son watching MTV or having full access to a lighter, which I believe are very good questions as well, it wasn't even used to deflect it. Mike Judge apparently felt horrible about the fact that this happened and was apparently sent countless hate mail because of it. It also led to Beavis not mentioning fire for a while. So the whole fire bit kind of like they played that down for a bit because, you know, sensibility.
Fire is cool.
But yeah, that's,
I mean, you still haven't talked about what Beavis and Butthead is.
Beavis and Butthead is basically just two fucking idiots being stupid. Two dumb teenagers.
It's like the animated
two
show.
Dumb teenagers. Yes.
Let's
yes.
start there. It's an animated sure. show that aired on MTV in the 90s.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, that, I basically covered it. It's just
Mike Judge.
Mike Judge.
Where basically two teenagers sit in front of a television just rotting their brains with, like, music videos.
Yes. And occasionally going out into the world and being stupid out there.
Yes.
And it's... I love this form of comedy. Just watching two people be insanely stupid to their own detriment is really funny. Especially watching them get hurt.
But, like
it's
I
really
mean,
funny
yes.
watching them get hurt.
Them getting hurt is arguably the best part of the movie. I feel like... On that note, we also, like, you kind of have to talk about the cultural dominance of, like, MTV from, like, the mid-2000s to sure. mid-aughts, because, like...
It was a major cultural driver at the time.
Oh, yeah. Such, like...
It was a
you,
big deal.
Like, you talking about those... I had completely forgotten about, like, that news story that
yeah.
you mentioned, but, like, as soon as you started on, I was like, oh, yeah, that was a fucking thing that happened, huh?
Yeah.
But they
spearheaded a lot of concerned parents.
Like,
you know.
you look at things like that, you look at, like, Jackass and,
oh, sure.
like, the prevalence of, like, teenagers starting to do, like, dumb, like, skate video, like, stunts and shit and hurting themselves, like, that way. Like, I it's very, like, what was that, like, documentary series, like, The Collapse of Western Civilization?
Oh, yeah, The Decline of Western Civilization.
Yeah, it's very... Like, MTV, like, kind of was secretly making their own, like, The Decline of Western Civilization Part 4 with, like, their cultural dominance throughout that, like, period of time.
Sure. It should just also be noted, like, MTV at the time was in... animation powerhouse. They had Liquid Television.
It's so weird to consider. Like, that was one of the funny things, like, watching this movie is seeing that, like, MTV, like, productions, like Moon Man, like studio logo popping up in the beginning and being like, that just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah,
like, the
inescapable at the time does not exist anymore.
But yeah, like, you had Daria, you had Beavis and Butthead, you had Liquid Television.
I loved Daria.
Like,
yeah, Aeon Flux was a
Aeon Flux,
for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at like MTV2 and there's like that even like stretches out a bit further too. You have shit like Wonder Shows and like as like a countercultural product and the like.
Of course, you know, despite the fact that this all began with playing music videos as a TV station, they now MTV 1 and 2, I think, are entirely owned by Rob Dyrdek and are just there to play reruns of ridiculousness. It used to be a place that played music and it had all of these like, you know, fascinating animations that were very culturally like prevalent at the time.
Part of me wonders like where exactly Mike Judge sits on like his opinion on stuff like MTV, because I feel like the argument could be made that like of just how like nihilistic his view like television is. Like, when you consider Beavis and Butthead as characters, like, it seems like he was, at the very least at the time of that show's original inception, was way more down on that shit and was just like, this is terrible. This is actually, like, killing brain cells.
Mike Judge is the guy who eventually made Idiocracy, right?
Yeah.
That was him, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like we should talk a bit about Mike Judge, because like Mike Judge is like he was a showrunner for Beavis and Butthead. He was showrunner for King of the Hill. He's done
Office Space.
Yes, Office Space was huge at the time.
I can't wait to talk about that movie, because that one, I feel like out of everything that Mike Judge has done, I feel like that's probably the most prescient of like all of the things that he has done. But
on the list.
Continue on your point. Sorry.
He went on to make Idiocracy, which is we could talk all day about Idiocracy.
Rondo has what plants crave.
He's done a lot of various like other animation projects. There was a short-lived show like kind of riffing on King of the Hill. The idea was like it was supposed to go the other direction. They were called the Good Family.
Oh my god! I have like the vaguest memory.
Crunchy hippies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. It was. It did not last very long, probably for good reason.
I never saw it.
But yeah, he's someone who has like been present on various projects, like kind of. You know, I don't know if Beavis and Butthead was like his first big thing, but he's basically been somewhere in the cultural landscape since then. It's weird to consider like this is where he was at like 30 years ago.
Yeah. Just a bunch of teenagers like laughing at signs that vaguely look like the word butt.
Oh, yeah. Penis.
Just penis. Like looking at a statue with boobs and just like gawking at it for like,
it's also fun
literally
to
trying
how...
to scramble up it like lizards.
Yeah.
Just like,
it's also fun to look back. We were talking about it, how like their neighbor, Mr. Anderson, is just the precursor for Hank Hill.
It's just Hank Hill. It's the same voice. It's
like you
alternate
could argue
universe.
You could not even alternate universe. One could argue that like he is probably so like that is where Hank Hill ends up at the true end of like Hank Hill's like storyline, is he ends up as Mr. Anderson.
Yeah. In later in life.
Yeah. But let's, I guess with all that out of the way, we can finally talk about Beavis and Butthead Do America properly. So take us through a run through of the movie itself.
Well, I'll give like the intro here, essentially.
Beavis and Butthead. The Do America means Beavis and Butthead are fucking America.
Beavis and Butthead are thought to be criminals in a crime that they're too stupid to know they have been made a part of. They aren't even going to do said crime, as they misinterpreted the job of killing this guy's wife instead of having sex with her. Basically, the entire thing is, you know, their TV went missing. They wake up to find, oh god, our TV's gone. They go looking for another TV to no avail, and they run into this guy at a motel while looking for a TV in them.
who's just like, oh, you must be the two guys I hired to do my wife.
Yeah.
Leading to them thinking, we're going to get paid to do your wife? This is cool.
It's all a comedy of errors.
Yeah, like, and it's it leads them...
Like, yeah, it's all just like a thin, like... pretext to get Beavis and Butthead to travel the country and like be idiots in various places.
Just yeah. accidentally sending them on a tour bus across the US.
Is Beavis and Butthead just stupider Bill and Ted?
Yeah.
No, are they? Would you say that they're stupider?
Yeah, like it's kind of like riffing on that same idea of just like, oh, look at these two knuckleheads.
I guess so.
But yeah. Like,
look, check it out. It's so crates.
Yeah, like it's like if you had like a less generous, like it's Bill and Ted from like considerably less generous lands.
If you lobotomized Bill and Ted, you get Beavis and Butthead.
Yes. If it's like 10 years later and like you hated them for whatever reason, like Beavis and Butthead is what you get.
I hate to be this person that's like dissecting like jokes and the humor of it, but like we kind of have to talk about like what is the comedic appeal of Beavis and Butthead a little bit, because that's the thing that makes like the best moments of this movie so fucking funny, which like maybe this is just my read of Beavis and Butthead, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, Brie, but like, I feel like the thing that people find funny about Beavis and Butthead is the juxtaposition of like these just absolute fucking like homunculus morons like against normal people, like just normal fucking people. Like it's them being thrown into scenarios that are literally just normal scenarios, like being in a convenience store or something like that, and like looking at the hot dogs on the roller, and you know, just instead of being like, oh, let me get one of them hot dogs, one of them is staring at it and saying, wieners.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's objectively nothing funny about this, but it's because this guy is such a fucking moron that he finds it funny that it becomes
the absurdity
funny.
Of being somewhere, even from like a gas station to like a government building talking to people, where you're just saying the dumbest shit in the universe is so funny.
So that's the thing that I argue makes this movie like work more so for me than normal Beavis and Butthead.
For sure.
Is the scale is blown so out of fucking proportion that like it forces you to find it funny.
Yeah.
Like every time they're like just walking away from like a scene chuckling to themselves and there's like a 50 car pile behind them on the freeway.
Yeah,
that's
plane crashing in the background, nuclear bombs going off.
Literally at least maiming or killing a bunch of people because
the one major continuity issue in this is several times their neighbors like camper and truck get destroyed and they're still driving it and it's still fine.
But yeah, that is the thing that makes this movie work more for me than normal Beavis and Butthead, because like in the normal scenarios it's so fucking casual that like it just doesn't do it for me. Like the anti-humor of it like just circles back around to not being funny as opposed to being funny. But this movie it goes so far with it that it's like, okay, like them being on the airplane and getting into their shenanigans, like
it's a very pre-9/11 movie.
Seeing Butthead get flown to the back of the fucking plane
and immediately hit on the stewardess once he says
hey baby, do you want to help me with my seatbelt again?
As the plane like plummets to the ground, like
because Beavis apparently not understanding how a plane works is screaming, we're gonna die! And ending up in the cockpit.
Well, it's not that ends him up in the cockpit. It's him, like, just downing, like, fistfuls of caffeine pills.
Yeah.
Taking every pill out of this woman's purse who he refers to
eating all
as
candy.
The slut.
Because he such an idiot that he hears her saying slots
and going to Vegas.
Thinks that she's saying sluts. However, she's so poor of hearing that she doesn't understand that he's saying sluts. So she thinks that he's still talking about slots. It's just an Ouroboros of stupidity eating itself.
Hey, buddy, this slut's pretty cool.
That lady is such a funny, like, straight man to put these two against because she's so good-natured that she doesn't really, like, register.
She's maybe that lady is maybe the backbone of this movie that, makes it work.
Here, try some Xanax. Oh, help yourself.
That's what the label says, right?
More no-dos. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Also, the lady is played by Cloris Leachman, who is like a, you know, she's a an actress who is around forever. If I know her best because she had a run on Dancing with the Stars sometime after this movie was made, and there was like one number that they did where she just ran straight into the camera with her tits out. And it was just like, damn, Cloris.
I pictured that like being the what's the Lynch film running at the camera?
Oh, the Inland Empire.
That but tits is what I was imagining when you said that.
The cast of this movie is weirdly stacked, and not just because it has Robert Stack in a very prominent role.
It has Bruce Willis and Demi Moore, which in and of itself is like a funny, like, kind of MTV tabloid, like, in joke of the time, because they were like a big power couple of the 90s.
Oh yeah.
Were those two.
And getting divorced around this time, because like if you remember from a previous episode, Bruce getting divorced was
Island
what
of
blew
Dr.
up
Moreau.
Him being in the Island of Dr. Moreau.
It's all fucking connected.
It's all connected.
The maps we put together while we work on this project.
This is what makes this podcast so fun, is getting these weird through lines that we do in here. But no, yeah, like those two are in this movie.
Greg Kinnear.
Yeah, Greg Kinnear.
Yeah, he plays like the FBI, the toady of the Bork. Main FBI guy, who is played by Robert Stack.
You have essentially what is kind of like the prelude to those future versions of Beavis and Butthead that you see in the in the newer shows. And one of them is played by David Letterman.
Uncredited by David Letterman.
Yes. You have that. Richard Linklater is in this movie for some reason. I mean, I guess I can kind of understand why he is, because like, probably around this time, it's like after the success of like Slackers, which is very much like that kind of MTV, like early 90s, like countercultural, like type of like piece of cinema. Like it's up there with something like a Clerks.
Sure.
That you look at as being an example of like the indie wave of that era. But yeah, you have Richard Linklater in there. You have Toby Huss is in there.
Toby Huss, but Toby Huss is also like I don't know if this is his first appearance, but like he becomes a consistent like collaborator with Judge, because like he's on King of the Hill through its like run. And I think he's in Office Space and Idiocracy as well. I can't remember.
Who is playing the guy who puts out the hit again?
That's Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis.
Which he, good job, Bruce Willis. Yeah. He fucking disappears into his role as Muddy. Like, I did not recognize his voice.
You would expect to just hear his voice, but it's like, no, he gave him a voice, gave him a life of his own. He did a good job.
All that work.
David Spade is uncredited in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Just doing various voices.
Bruce Willis getting his practice in from Look Who's Talking for his voice acting roles. Where were we going from? I
you
lost
were
track
in the plane
work.
Talking about the old lady and how Beavis was just like eating everything inside of her purse. Mm-hmm.
After all of this chaos, when they finally do land in Vegas, they just walk out, no problem. Also, no,
yeah.
Again, a pre-9/11 movie. No one's looking into these kids who have been, like, bouncing around the, like, restricted areas of the plane, screaming and causing chaos. They just walk up and they find the guy who's, you know, telling them, like, hey, you gotta meet this guy here to do this job.
Except they can't read their fucking names.
Yep.
Well, I mean, they're it's probably those two are probably illiterate.
Yeah.
Like they are. Yeah,
I feel like the core concept of Beavis and Butthead is just like, what if two dudes were as stupid as people generally thought the youth of the early 90s were?
Yeah. Like, because as much as the youth emulated it, I don't think most kids were that stupid.
Yeah.
But it is that kind of like, you know, the world's falling apart and music is Satanism and kids are going crazy and stupid. Like, this is the loud Linda or whatever the hell you call that stereotype of old lady who's like, think about the children, thinks the youth is. Like, disconnected right from it entirely.
But yeah, they go to Vegas, they meet up with what's her name?
Dallas,
that's yeah, it. Yeah, that's, you got it. Muddy and Dallas. Meets up with Dallas. Dallas essentially catches on to the fact that, like, Muddy hired them to kill her, but they're too stupid to realize that's like, what yeah, he was trying to do.
She's, like, technically the one character who actually does see through them. Like,
she absolutely is. Like, she is the only... I would say that she's probably the only smart character in this movie. Everyone else in this movie is fucking moron.
As far as the government, the neighbor, the people they walk into. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she does. Yeah. Like, Robert Stack's character basically says, like, one of you is going to prison for 60 years and the other one is going to be fine.
Yeah, whoever turns the person in who did this. Yeah. And just...
Which, speaking of the government being stupid, this might just be me, like, being, like, thinking too much about it. But do you think that, like, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, like, organization being so prominent in this movie is, like, connected to, like, the Waco incident?
Oh, yeah. I think that's... Okay, sure. Yes. Yes, I think that's 100%.
Okay. Because, like, that was a... Considering that Beavis and Butthead is a Texas-ass Texas thing, yeah. Mike Judge is a Texas-ass Texas guy, like, that Waco... Evie, I don't know why, but I feel like you could probably more easily summarize, like, the Waco incident than I could.
I actually don't know that much about it. There was, like, a standoff where the ATF, like, had basically, you know, barricade... Like, it's like... The Branch Davidian cult.
Was that the Timothy Leary one?
I don't know if it's Tim.
No, I actually do not know that much about it. But,
like,
it's
Koresh. That was
yeah, Dave Koresh.
That was his cult, right?
Yeah, and so the ATF like basically surrounded their compound, and it turned into a massive fiasco.
Yeah, the government fumbled it so bad that basically, like, destroyed the reputation of the ATF for time in memoriam.
Uh-huh.
like, funnily enough, the ATF plays a major role in this movie, and they are constantly fumbling the bag. Robert Stack is constantly demanding that every single person they apprehend gets a full cavity search.
Yeah.
Deep cavity search.
I want you to reach the back of his teeth.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that whole level of it, which is very prominent. I have much to tie that to later on. But basically, while this is going on, the thing that Dallas was doing is she's apparently a very dangerous criminal who, you know, of course, ends up pinning it on Muddy. But she has a dangerous bioweapon stolen from the government in a very, very delicate casing that she sews into Beavis's pants to pin it on him. And just Butthead is constantly kicking his ass and it's taking abuse. Like, oh, God, that's going to blow up.
Well, that's a... That's the joke there is specifically right before it shows like Butthead kicking him in the ass.
Yeah.
Robert Stack's character is like, the one problem with it is that it is a very fragile casing and the slightest impact could cause it to break open. And it's
kicking the shit out of it. Like it's very funny.
Also, I just want to note that virus they specifically says was tested on their own soldiers for some reason.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Very government move there, but yeah, from there it just becomes like a road trip for Beavis and Butthead going across America. Like they go to like what is basically Yellowstone. Like they have like the big geysers and everything.
They get mesmerized by automatic urinals.
They get mesmerized by automatic urinals to the point that they miss their bus that they're supposed to get on and hop on a different bus that's full of nuns.
And this bus is full of chicks. We're gonna score.
we didn't even talk about how the movie opens with like Butthead having a King Kong dream where they're just walking around like breaking buildings and they find like a woman and grab her and just like get out of here, I'm trying to score. They're like smacking helicopters out of
the sky.
It's so fucking dumb. It's so dumb.
I just still got
I'm like
the
really
on,
tall
the play on words with the title where it's like they're doing America in the same way that like the idea that like they're doing America like they're fucking America but also they're killing America because of the brain rot. Because like the brain rot.
That's a beautiful thing I hadn't even considered, but you're right.
It wouldn't even come to mind except that they like that specific misinterpretation is like the core of the whole plot.
Yes.
Like,
I definitely thank you for that. I had not considered
that.
That's clever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they, once they're at this church that the nuns are going to, they end up like in the little confessional booths.
The confessionals, like one dude is like talking about having an affair, and Butthead is on the other side, being like, "Wow, did you see her boobs?"
Well, just, yes. Was she naked?
Like,
yes, I had sex with her.
Them doing that is such a blasphemous act that as they leave the church, they literally get struck by fucking lightning.
And then they walk off.
It's such a good, subtle joke.
Yeah.
That, like, half of us here... Yeah,
like,
that's
like,
what I was going to say.
Why?
It's so good.
I was like out of nowhere, and then I realized, it's repentance.
God literally tried to smite those boys.
Yeah. Beavis was at a confessional booth telling the guy, hit yourself. Yeah, hit yourself hard. 1,000 Hail Marys.
So you have the church thing. You have the Hoover Dam thing where they basically they destroy the Hoover Dam.
Yeah. Which washes, you know, their neighbor and his wife off with their camper. Like,
They get lost in the desert after that. Like, that's where they run into, like, what is effectively the future versions of themselves who are actually their dads.
Yep.
Butthead's dad farts into the campfire that they make and it does, like, a big nuclear explosion. It's really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Beavis
Special
eats-
attention to... The if Beavis and Butthead are homunculus, those two are like human monsters.
They look awful.
Yeah.
Nightmarish.
Ferocious.
Yeah.
Which like that I talked about the juxtaposition of like those weird homunculus lads being compared to like the normal people, but like it wasn't until watching this movie that I really considered like how fucked up must these boys look? Like, you see every other person in this series, and they look like... Mike Judge has, like, a pretty realistic, like, approach to, like, drawing people.
Like you said, there's several people who look like old Peggy that, you know, very
except,
drawn people.
Except for Beavis and Butthead, who, like, you consider their character design, and you're
and
like, what is
heads.
Wrong? Yeah.
From character design as a concept, Butthead is three heads tall. His head is half of those.
Yeah.
You understand? Like, he's just... It's insane. It's
awful. Yeah. Awful boys. But yeah, Beavis eats, like, some kind of hallucinatory plant in the desert and animates, like, a fantastic little animated music video that we get in there.
Yeah, White Zombies, Rat Fink, Suicide Tanks, and Cannibal Girls, which popped onto my workout playlist, so you can thank the Spotify algorithm for me thinking, I wonder if the movie we just watched connects to that movie.
Never thank the Spotify algorithm.
I don't, but usually. But in this case, it was like, yeah, here's the thing. I already liked that song, so sure. It was on my playlist. Okay. But the thing is, it came up on a random thing, and I was like, you know what? I should see if it connects to that film, because it always makes me think of that scene the first place I heard White Zombie. So
I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So, like, I was like, I wonder if that's connected, and it sure is. And you know what? Looking back at that again, just a marvel of animation. Beautiful.
No, it is a genuinely great piece of animation.
Yeah.
That, again, is very funny juxtaposed to, like, the rest of how Beavis and Butthead is, like, animated. Which, like, it's...
You know what's funny? Until you pointed it out, I never really connected that he probably ate peyote. I honestly always thought that was just due to their dehydration. They got fucked up.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, no, that's... Because I thought they were both experiencing that in my head, but I'd never made that connection. That's exactly what happened. Okay. but yeah, that's that. What a fucking little... Of course you had to have a music video in the, you know... The Beavis and Butthead thing, because that show was famous for having a middle part where they would, like, watch a bit of a music video, like them watching MTV. Mm-hmm. So, like, that had to travel over into the movie, of course, of making a video for that, and it's great. It's just great.
It is a very fun sequence, yeah, because specifically the animation is trying to, like, capture those... I can't remember the name of the artist, but, like... The
rats with the giant, like, bulging eyes riding motorcycles, kind of, you know, that kind of thing.
The kind of, like, almost Flesher animation style cartoony thing, but usually with some kind of, like, macabre twist to it. But yeah, it's...
Again,
our
apologies for not knowing the name of the artist. Yeah.
I want to say that artist specifically worked on this movie.
I mean, with him. Like,
like, he's credited, I think, as one of the, like, directors. Or not directors, but, like, lead animators.
One of the director of that sequence also helped make Titmouse.
Oh, the animation studio. Okay.
I can see that.
They are also the director of Metalocalypse and Megas XLR.
That makes a lot of sense. God, I love Megas XLR, and Metalocalypse was really good.
It says that obviously it's based off of Rob Zombie's work because it's a fucking White Zombie song, but also I think it's supposed to be like his illustrations as well.
Can we talk about the elephant in the room and say that, like, the real entertainment value of us watching this movie together was laughing more at Bree constantly laughing throughout this movie.
You sure were.
Like,
and I ended up in a full loop where I'm laughing at the fact that you're judging me, laughing at me, laughing at this movie.
It was so funny because, like, you were consistently laughing throughout this movie in the same way that Beavis and Butthead are always consistently laughing to themselves.
There's that little piece of my childhood that was watching them going, washing the dog, and, like, laughing my ass off. I think every time I revisit this property, I'm still laughing as hard as I was when I was a kid. Like, it's still just really, really, like, because it is so absurdly stupid that even I as a kid watch these two, like, supposed teenagers just being the dumbest fucking idiots in the world. I love it. Like, it's just that the absurdity to which they are stupid around the world around them is so funny to me.
Yeah.
And clearly to many other people, thus the prominence that it had. But, like, I'm one of those people. I was definitely their target audience and still am.
For me, to circle back to the thing that you talked about, the parts that really shine the most are the parts where these, like, absolute buffoons are, like, being physically punished
oh, yeah.
by the world around them. Like, anytime violence is being done to them, it is the best part of the movie. Like, we talked about, like, the God smiting them moment. Uh-huh. Like, again, the part where they are in the airplane and, like, Butthead is just tumbling down the fucking aisle.
Head to ass yeah. a million times.
Yeah. That part, the fucking...
Freeway?
The freeway scene is so... funny, just because they fall out the back of the speeding car and they're like,
if you get tumbling, a running start, you'll be fine, dumbass.
Tumbling, crashing into cars, the cars of which
swerving
are like
out of the way.
Crashing and exploding. Yeah. Like, it's such a massive scale of destruction that
in their wake
is hilarious.
It's amazing. Like, that's it. If you want to listen, if you're having a bad day and you need to immediately smile, pull up freeway scene from this, like, just find that on the internet. That'll make your day. It always makes me laugh my ass off.
Like, after Butthead pushes Beavis out the car, like, yeah. he's just sitting, standing up in the trunk, like, yeah. That was cool. And then, like, they hit a bump, he smacks his head and proceeds yeah. to tumble out of the car
causing
and do the
more
same
havoc.
Thing. It's great. It's a great scene.
So great.
And then they just get up and walk away and get into that fucking tour bus that they were in with the old lady before. She calls them over like, hey, boys!
Yeah, this is after they got a deep cavity searched.
Yeah.
No, that's another great thing when, like, you know, that's some of the flavor text of the feeling of this sort of show is, like, you know, in this movie when Butthead has like a million ATF guns pointed at his head and he's like, whoa, this is cool.
I mean, the whole fucking, it wasn't very funny to me, but seeing the joy on your face during the whole, like, cornholio in the White House sequence, like, just kept a smile on my face, because for those who don't know what cornholio is, when Beavis gets, like, extremely, like, sugared up or really horny, he takes his t-shirt, puts the collar over his head, holds his hands up, and starts talking in a ridiculous voice, being like, I am Cornholio! I need Cornholio for my bangle!
Are you threatening me?
Are you threatening me?
Like, the thing is, I think I find that especially funny. A, because, again, now we have, like, the absurdity of that level of stupidity in a government building. But also, it's just kind of the harmless version of the current political situation. is a blonde idiot walking around speaking in tongues. So it's kind of like, you know what? This is a harmless and funny version of that.
Like, he literally gets on the phone to, like, the Pentagon. Yeah. And they, like, think that, like, the president is in danger and they go into, like, DEFCON 4.
It's important to note that these two have already been considered dangerous, like, terrorists by the government.
Yes.
So...
But it's so dumb. Butthead, like, finds the president's daughter and gets thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to hit on her.
We do get animated Bill Clinton in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Right at the end where they're hailed as heroes.
Honorary ATF agents. And they're just like, cool.
Cool. Guns and tobacco.
He's also like, yeah, it's pretty cool, huh?
Which, if that isn't making a political statement, I don't know what is.
Oh, sure.
You really kind of feel it.
I don't even know what else there is. I don't have much else to say about the movie, I think.
I've got a lot to gush on here.
All the jokes about them whacking off in their neighbor's camper van is so funny.
Oh, yeah. They're like a couple of spider monkeys, I'll tell you. Yeah. I didn't know someone could whack it that much.
Like... The part where, like, Beavis finally gets outside and he sees the camper, he sees the photo of Dallas, and he just keeps cutting back and forth, and he, like, just goes into the thing, and you just hear him be like, oh, ah, ah, ah.
Like, now what's going on in my camper?
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Get out of here! Now I have to clean up.
This is after, like, originally they set out this adventure because their TV gets stolen, like, literally in front of them. Somehow they just didn't wake up when somebody broke into their house.
It's important to mention that the way this ends is they come across it having fallen out and been abandoned for probably being a piece of shit by the people.
Not
who
probably,
had it anyway.
Definitely being a piece of shit. You have, like, a clip with the guys that got this, that Beavis and Butthead got mistaken for, being
who
like,
ended up
we
being
need
the
to,
ones who stole their TV.
We need to steal from rich people.
Yeah, like, they only steal shit. But then they find it, they're like, hey, we have our TV back. So it's like that beautiful.
They get their happy ending.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a lot to say about this film, if I may. I've got a few different thoughts here. These two stupid teenage lost causes are wrongfully labeled as dangerous terrorists by the U.S. government, which is so busy tearing apart everyone else's freedoms in this film to find its bioweapon that they're too unorganized and dumb to even track down the two most stupid teenagers in America. One of the people who gets screwed by the government is our hippie teacher character, Mr. Van Driesen, who points out to the ATF after they storm and trash his classroom that there's a thing called due process and they can't just abduct, cavity search, and imprison him. Being a wing of the American government, they do just that anyway. Free Van Driesen, goddammit. After illegally detaining a countless number of people and pinning the whole thing on a war veteran, the once thought terrorists, but actual idiots who basically did nothing heroic, are brought to the White House and made an honorary part of the ATF. This film not only perfectly encapsulates teenage stupidity in the 90s, but it also paints a perfect picture of the complete ineptitude and reckless actions of the U.S. government to levels that I feel would be as obvious. Wouldn't be as obvious until today, really. This is more a true film about how stupid the American government is than Beavis and or Butthead. And that's kind of my general final thoughts on this.
All right.
Well, a lot to say.
Aside from final thoughts, does anyone else have, like, particular things they want to touch on in the movie?
I just also want to... I did enjoy the ever-escalating... them trying to get a new TV and, like, just breaking each and every single one of them.
Every TV they come in contact with is destroyed, usually at their
hand. They try to steal the TV from their high school, and they, like, get to the stairs, like, at the entrance, and they accidentally push it down. The principal finds them and is just like, what are you doing? And they're like, that's your property. Like, and just leave.
That TV is broken.
It should be in the AV room.
Yeah. Then they go to the fucking their neighbor's trailer and, like, find the TV in there. They accidentally spill soda on it. They get out of the trailer and Anderson walks up to them and is like, what are you boys doing in there? And his wife's like, they're here to fix the TV. He's like, it's not broken. And they're like, yeah, it is. Then they go to the hotel.
Oh yeah, they get to the motel. They first run into their principal again, who is with a prostitute,
like,
whipping his ass.
Yeah.
And they go, can we watch your TV? Get out of here! Beavis and Butthead, you're expelled! I love it.
They go into Muddy's room and try to watch the TV in there, and he fucking shoots the TV, so they can't even watch that.
And that leads to the whole setup of him thinking they're the two who came there to, like, set up killing his wife.
It's
a beautiful, just, you know, like you said, a errors.
Comedy of errors.
That's it.
Yeah. Does they have anything else before final thoughts?
She wants us to do him. With that much money, we can buy a new TV.
Yeah. Beavis confirmed as bi curious.
Yeah. Why don't I have you do him instead? He's like, I don't know. It's a lot of money. I could buy a TV with that.
Do you want $1 or $2?
Do you want
$1? Get into that. But yeah, no, I mean, that's like, yeah, it's really good.
I guess final thoughts then. Yeah. Bridget, what are your final thoughts on Beavis and Butthead Do America?
This was a dumb, silly movie. One thing I will say is, like, besides that dream sequence, the animation's okay. It's not anything much to write home about.
I think that's part of the joke that, like, Battlehawk was saying earlier, where it's like being able to kind of a proto Adult Swim approach to like limited animation budget, where yeah. just really using the lack of money that they have to make that the joke.
Yeah, who's brave enough to do the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie?
Like, what I imagine makes this even funnier of a film than it is, which I didn't get the privilege at the time of experiencing, was probably seeing this in a full, like, THX speaker theater on a giant screen. Mm-hmm. Putting that on that platform is probably funny in itself.
Yeah. Evie, what are your final thoughts on Beavis and Butthead Do America?
We should take a second to put it in conversation with another movie we watched recently, The Day the Earth Blew Up, which is a very good movie. But like the limited animation bit in that movie with Farmer Jim.
Oh my God.
Which, if you haven't seen the movie, that wouldn't mean anything to you. But like,
but if you haven't, you should see it. It's good.
You should see it.
You should.
Farmer
see
Jim
it.
Is. Early in the movie, and also maybe the funniest thing in the movie, where it's just this farmer who adopts Porky Pig and Daffy Duck and is just like drawn
just
like
pristinely drawn,
like Ren and Stimpy-esque realistic no shaded animation. Like no animation.
He's
no like clutch cargo mouthed for
yeah,
like
he has
the
a
first,
clutch yeah. cargo mouth. He doesn't.
And literally when he walks, like, it's literally just, like, the cell of him, like,
yeah.
just kind of being shuffled across the animation.
And the Day the Earth Blew Up is a love letter to animation. You can tell, like, didn't you mention, Evie, it was, like, apparently written by the animators?
We can't, well, no, that was me. Well, was it confirmed that it was written by the animator specifically?
I mean, I couldn't confirm it, but I believe it.
Yeah, I was guessing that it was written by the animator.
If I found that out, I wouldn't be surprised.
We can't get bogged down in The Day the Earth Blew Up because
just to say,
Farmer Jim out, peace.
Just like the one time where he is like, you know, extremely like specifically animated is like when he states the thesis of a whole movie where he's just like,
where
you've
like,
got to take care of your home. Like
literally just like in Disney animation, like,
like Simba's dad popping in through the clouds.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, man. Anyway. That movie probably doesn't exist without Beavis and Butthead to America 30 years prior. But yeah, this movie was fun. It was funny. Like it is something I would like. You compare it to something like Freddy Got Fingered. I don't know if I would recommend a random normal person watch Freddy Got Fingered.
There's nothing normal about it.
I could very easily recommend Beavis and Butthead to America. Like it's a stupid movie, but one that I think most people would enjoy.
My general final thoughts on it are like, it's so tremendously stupid that in and of itself, like makes it a fun thing to watch through.
Precisely.
It takes a lot of craft to make something this stupid, but also like endearing in any sort.
Oh yeah.
Sure. But I guess moving on from that, it's time for me to talk about my final the next movie.
I hope you've got more time after this.
My choice, the final movie of this specific rotation.
Final Destination.
But for me to talk about that movie, we gotta show how the sausage is made a little bit. So
I'll get the
Bridget,
food processor.
Bridget. Earlier, like last month at some point, called her shot and said that she was going to pick Congo. And, you know, I asked her, like, okay, you're going to pick Congo? I will.
A beloved actor died. Jodon Baker.
I will counterpick you on Congo specifically. Like, I will make it so you have to use your wild card if you want to get to Congo. And
there's a new game in the game.
Bridget, you said to me that you are not going to use your wild card, that you refuse to use it. So I want to know, Bridget, how truly do you yearn for Congo? Do you really yearn for Congo?
I mean, I'll get to it eventually.
But how... how much do you yearn for it?
How bad do you want it?
Yeah, how bad do you want Congo?
I mean, it's a fun movie.
Do you feel, if I were to describe it as a yearning, do you yearn for Congo?
No.
Then I think it's time for me to teach you about what it means to yearn. Because my connection this time around is in the tour bus, the bus driver, for some reason, is played by Richard Linklater, who is more prominently known as a film director. And one of his most known projects is the Before Trilogy, which is a series of films that are centered around the same two characters and their relationship over the course of 18 years.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm going to teach you what it means to yearn, because the movie we're watching next time is Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, is the film that we are watching for the podcast next time. You're going to learn what it means to yearn, is what I am saying.
That was a brilliant Bridget trilogy. As a woman who lives across the country from her girlfriend, doesn't know anything about yearning.
Not
every single fucking thing.
Yeah, you gotta earn the yearn.
A film that I specifically picked, not simply because it has no connection to Congo, but because it is a good movie. But also, it has no connection to Congo. So if you want it, if you really yearn for Congo, you're gonna wild card to it. So this is me calling your bluff. How much do you want Congo?
I'm not gonna use a wild card, so I guess no Congo for now.
That's what we want to hear. Now.
So I guess let's go ahead and talk about where people can find us on various places. Evie, can people find you on social media?
Nah.
Bridget, can people find you on social media?
You can find me streaming things like Naked Gussie. You know, the
bad mouthfeel on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Naked Gussie.
I heard what you said, and I was watching the stream last night. I'm simply saying it has a bad mouthfeel to you, to it. Anyways, where can people find you streaming Naked Gussie?
At twitch.tv/sesquatchulous.
There you go. You found it. All right. Bree, where can people find you on the internet?
Hey, everybody. You can find me occasionally drawing, but mostly playing video games and joking like a dumbass over on my VTubing place on Twitch, Easy Breezy TV. That's EazyBreezyTV. You can also find my art and look at my art, and even if you want, commission my art over on vgen.co/asnesbo, which is my handle, ASNESBO. You can also find my art at a, weirdly, I wasn't thinking about it when I made it, but I have a Newgrounds account where you can find my art as well. This is under my, let me make sure I have my username right here, BreezyVTube, BreezyVTube.
Okay.
Over on Newgrounds, you can find my art there, where I've been scouted to the main portal because I am a quality artist. So I feel a certain kind of full circle here. Proud, having grown up with, you know, Newgrounds in my life, and now I'm one of the artists on there that they think is trying really hard. So means the world to me.
Okay.
But you can find me there too.
Great.
Yep.
Check out my Newgrounds page. What year is it?
Yeah. No, yeah, it's purely an art portal now. But
you can find me on the internet. I'm not going to tell you where to find me, but I will tell you where to find the podcast.
I'll tell you if you bribe me.
Sure. You can find us at putitonthelist.neocities.org, putitonthelist.bsky.social, wifecityproductions on youtube.com. Anywhere major podcasts are sold.
Oh, yes.
And you can send us emails at wifecitygaming@gmail.com. And you can join our Discord.
Sure.
I linked that in the last episode and no one joined for it. I don't know how much I'm going to really plug that.
The long and short of it is we used to be a gaming duo, Jay and I, and now the community is spilling into, you know, now doing this. So the project has changed a little bit, but the community is still friendly, and we're happy to bring on newcomers.
But with that, that's the end of the podcast. Yep. Everyone go home. I need to turn on the AC and stop this recording.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya. Penny, no.
What reviews connected by cast or crew deciding the next film? That's the gist. Put it on the list.
Bridget, every time you clap, I'm always really worried that you got the timing wrong, because you always have like a look of like shock or surprise on your face. You're like, did I get that?
It's also quite adorable, the elation on your face of referencing how you've been playing one of the worst games in the universe. It's endearing. It is.
Is the Popeye game really even that bad?
It's pretty fucking bad. The game is unfinishable because eventually it like has a memory leak that causes it to crash. It's like literally slows down the game.
Games have not come a long way since Pac-Man.
If anything, if there's any argument against the idea of video games as art, it is that Popeye game.
Yeah.
Is that Popeye game that is delisted, so you either have had to own it or you have to emulate it, which I can't imagine that thing's emulatable. That thing's probably running on like
someone would have to do the work, and I don't think anyone would.
That thing is running on fucking like tire fire and dreams nightmares.
I was worried. I was like, am I gonna be able to download Popeye on the Switch 2?
Were you really worried about that?
Yes.
Why?
Because there's nothing more better to get. Using the power of the Switch 2 to run Popeye more effectively.
That's why you bought it at the end of the day.
I want you to know when I loaded up the game, the title screen loaded in like a web page. Like a fucking web page from top to bottom. So I have high hopes for that.
You were truly gaming in the Clinton years there.
Yeah.
Before we go further in this, I need to go pee. I'll be right back.
The Eevee Minute.
Oh, I don't have anything for the Eevee Minute.
Smash or pass, Mr. Mime?
Pass. Pass.
I'm not going to fuck a clown.
What about... There's video evidence of you naming an island Clussy.
What does that have to do with anything? That's just a naming convention. I didn't say I wanted to fuck the island. Can you imagine what this one-sided conversation sounds like to Jay in the other room? I'm not into Clussy. That's not for me. It's just a joke.
Time to play Popeye.
No, put Popeye away. There will be no Popeye.
I'm coming back. Put Popeye away. I'm coming back.
I'm putting
put
the
your
pee
Popeye
back in
away.
And I'm coming back.
Not on stream.
What was that?
Don't expose your Popeye on stream.
I wasn't trying to expose myself. I was rearranging my junk.
No, I be me.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Next up.
All right, and moving on to questions more related.
If that's really fucked up to refer to that as somebody's Popeye, I would never do that.
It's got one eye the whole time. You can stick a pipe in it.
Ah, no!
I find it astounding whenever I'm sounding. I'm Popeye the dick in your pants.
This sucks.
Okay, now then.
This is gonna make a great stinger.
It is.